Real for Me by Pink Ninja, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Niall is 3 years old, and her mama says she has lots of imaginary friends. "No, I don't," she tells her mama. "I have lots of imaginary people, but only one is my friend." "Oh, yeah? And which one is that?" mama asks. Niall beams. "Joe," she says. Joe is her favorite. He makes her laugh all the time. Whenever she sits on the floor for Mama to do her hair, Joe sits down across from her. Nikki stands behind him and puts Joe's curly hair in a matching hairstyle, even if it's in puffs or has bows in it, and Joe always makes funny faces when they do it, which makes Niall laugh, and Mama has to keep telling her to hold still. Joe puts a finger up to his lips to remind her to be quiet, making his eyes big and pretend serious, but that just makes Niall laugh harder. So Joe is her favorite, but she likes all her imaginary people. Nikki loves food, but he can't eat it because he's imaginary. He's always in the kitchen with Mama, sitting on the bench and swinging his legs through the cabinet. One of Niall's first memories is sitting in her high chair and eating strawberries, and she holds one out for Nikki, and he opens his mouth and closes it, and his mouth goes through the whole strawberry and her pudgy fist. And Mama asks, "What are you doing there, baby? You sharing?" And Niall smiles up at her. Joe sits with Niall when she plays. He can't really pick up the blocks, but sometimes he pushes them closer when they're far away. Or Niall will make a really big tower that's taller than she is, but Joe will blow on it and the whole tower will fall down, and Niall will squeal in delight. "Niall, you get down off that bookcase," Mama calls out. "It's not safe." "But Miss Andy says..." "Oh, well, if Miss Andy says..." Mama rolls her eyes. "Miss Andy would have you juggling knives if she had her way." Niall looks over at the corner, then starts nodding and turns back to Mama. "Miss Andy says, great idea." And she tries to give two thumbs up, but then she topples and flops back onto the lounge. Grandpa likes to do puzzles. Niall isn't allowed to run around the table in the back room in case she bumps it and Grandpa has to start all over again. But she is allowed to climb up onto his knee and help him name all the colors. Grandpa picks up the box and brings it closer to his face, and Niall looks at the picture. "I used to live there," Niall says. "Oh, yeah?" Grandpa says. "At the Coliseum? Doesn't sound like a pleasant place to live." "No, people died there. I live over by the river," Niall says, and points past it at a part of the city. "It was different then. I got eaten by rats while I slept. But it's okay. I got better." "Huh," Grandpa says. "And there were so many horses there. Can I get a horse again?" "Honey, you ain't never had a horse in the first place," Grandpa says. Niall scrunches up her nose at him. "Yes, I did," she insists. But she calms down and smiles. "But it was before you were born, Grandpa. I don't expect you to remember it." And she pats his hand lovingly, then climbs down to go get a snack. Something goes bang in Niall's room in the middle of the night. She sits up and grabs her teddy for protection, looking around by the nightlight. She's scared. In the darkness, she can see a shape, a person. It's... "Oh, Book Book," she says, relieved. "It's just you." But Book Book looks upset, worried. He moves to her bedroom door and beckons with his arm. Niall shakes her head. "I can't play now. It's bedtime." Book Book reaches out a hand, and bang, another book gets pushed off her shelf and hits the ground. He beckons again, then drifts through the tiny crack in the door. Confused, Niall brings Teddy with her and pulls the door open. It's dark out in the hallway, so dark even Mama and Papa have gone to bed. She follows the silvery light of Book Book's big coat past the bathroom, and he slides through Travis's bedroom door. Travis is her little baby brother, and she's gotten in trouble for waking him up before. She can't let Book Book wake him up. She creaks open the door. "Book Book," she hisses, "you can't be in here." But Book Book is just standing over Travis's crib, looking down at him. Niall tiptoes over and peers down at Travis. He's a funny color and moving all wrong, like he can't breathe. Book points out the door towards her parents' bedroom, but Niall is stuck with her feet on the floor, staring down at her baby brother. Book, for the first time ever, puts his hand on Niall and pushes. She stumbles and looks up at him, shocked. But Book always has a serious face, but now he looks a little scary. He points at her parents' room again. She bursts through their door. "Something's wrong with baby Travis," she yells, grabbing Mama's arm and pulling. "Something's wrong!" Papa picks up the baby monitor, but it's not working, so he slams it back down and gets out of bed. "Come on, you gotta do something!" Niall has little hands, but they grip tight around Mama's wrist. By the time Mama gets to her feet and goes into the room, Papa is cradling Travis and tells her to call an ambulance. It's all loud and scary around Niall for lots of the night after that. Mama goes to the hospital with Travis, and Papa lets Niall sleep in the big bed with him. But in the morning, it doesn't look like Papa slept at all. The phone rings, and Papa talks to Mama again. Some more small bits of good news, Niall thinks. Papa says, "Okay," and, "That's good, isn't it?" And, "All right, tell me when the doctors come around. A lot." Papa pulls Niall close and hugs her tight. "You did the right thing, sweetie," Papa says again. "How did you know?" "Huh?" "It was 2 a.m., Niall. How did you know your brother needed you?" Papa asked. Niall shrugs. "My people told me." Papa's hand stops where it's stroking down Niall's back. "Your people?" "Yeah, my imaginary people. Book woke me up and told me to get help." "What does..." Papa tries again. "What does Book look like?" "I don't know. Sad, I guess. Book only smiles when there's babies around." Niall wiggles around in Papa's hug. "Can I have breakfast now?" Papa is quiet for a little while. Then he nods. "Sure, sweetheart. Let's have eggs." Mama gets both of her babies back, healthy and happy. She tucks one child under each arm on the bed, holds them tight, and rocks slowly side to side. In the corner, Miss Andy watches them. She wraps her arms around herself and swings slowly side to side. The bus is trundling along, jolting and stopping at the bus stops through the city. Niall presses her face against the glass and watches the world go by. A black lady with a headscarf gets on the bus and sits behind them, and Niall kneels up on her seat to talk to her. "You're really pretty," Niall says. The lady laughs, and Mama rushes to apologize. "Sorry, she just makes friends with everyone." "That's okay," the lady says, and her words sound pretty as well. "You're really pretty, too." "Are you from Mali?" Niall asks. The lady nods with a surprised look on her face. "Bonjour, kaifa halik?" The lady is delighted. "Bonjour, mademoiselle. Ana bakhair shokran. Wa anti?" "Niall," Mama gasps, "how did you know that?" "My friend taught me." The lady looks bemused, but not concerned. "How did you know I was from Mali?" Niall shrugs. "You are," she points out. "Well, your friends at preschool must be very clever," the lady guesses. "No, she doesn't go to preschool." "Niall, how did you know those words?" Mama asks. Niall huffs and drops back down into her chair, wearing the scrunched-up expression she gets whenever she's in trouble and doesn't agree with it. "I said already, my friend told me." Niall has been making art since she could wrap her little fingers around a pencil or shove her hand into a paint pot. She loves it. Her walls are covered with her creations. But it's the one thing that can make her the most angry, too. She scrunches up the paper she was working on and rips it. Niall grabs the pencil case from the end and shakes it hard. All her colored pencils go flying, and her mama makes a tutting sound. Niall sits there, her arms crossed and angry. "It's not working," she grumbles. Her mama puts a hand on her hair. Mama never gets mad at her for making a mess when it's only Niall who will clean it up. Mama picks up the crumpled paper and spreads it out gently on the table. Niall never tried the childish art style, the cartoonish sticks and circles for people, or with a square and triangle for a house. Niall always has her own shapes and lines. The torn drawing shows her own hand, curled in a fist. The fingers pressed together don't look like fat sausages Mama expects to see from a child Niall's age. Instead, it looks more like an attempt from someone in elementary school. There are wrinkle lines on the knuckles, and she's even tried to do shading on her curled fingers. "Oh, but this is wonderful," Mama exclaims. Travis is holding onto the furniture to walk on his wobbly legs, coming over to look at his big sister. "No, it's not. I can't get it right. The pencil keeps going all over." Niall rubs at the hot tears on her cheeks. "Joe makes it look so easy." And it's true. Joe sits beside her when she draws, doing his own artwork with pencils and paints she can't touch, but they're beautiful. He's in the other chair right now, a pained look on his face, like he's saying sorry with his eyebrows. "Well, honey," Mama says, "I'm sure Joe has had lots of practice." Joe nods a lot at this, eyes big. He fades away for a moment, and when he returns, he shows her a painting of a wobbly man with a floppy hat and a mole by his mouth, but all his limbs are flat and awkward, and the fingers are too long and nothing like what he usually makes. It makes Niall laugh. She still hasn't answered Mama. "Okay," she says. "Yeah, Joe practiced too." "See, you just do your practice and don't worry about what Joe does," Mama says. Niall dutifully starts picking up all the pencils. "Joe mostly draws Nikki anyway," Niall says. "It's a little boring." Joe's mouth drops open. "Oh, yeah?" Mama asks. "They're married, I think," Niall says. Joe buries his face in his hands. Mama arches an eyebrow. "Is that so?" "Yep." Niall's tongue works out the corner of her mouth as she grabs all the rest of the pencils. "They're always looking at each other." "Uh-huh," Mama says. "And Nikki is," Niall sighs with the put-upon annoyance of a teenager and says, "he's a white boy." Joe starts to fade away and down through the table, face still covered, but Miss Andy is on the ceiling, doubled over in silent laughter. They go to a fancy restaurant with the whole family to celebrate Papa's promotion. Mama gets the chicken nuggets for Travis, but Niall sniffs the air and points at a passing waiter and the plate he's carrying. "I want that," she says. The waitress laughs, but she's never gone up against Niall's determined face before. Papa nods helplessly. "You better do what she says," he advises. "If she doesn't finish it, I will." "All right," the waitress says, writing it down. "Bouillabaisse for the little lady." When the meal is placed down in front of her, Niall sniffs and rolls her eyes. "Where is Arui?" she asks. At the waitress's helpless look, she says, "It's fine, it's okay, I'll eat it." But Niall isn't happy about it and grumbles something that might be in another language. Over dessert, Grandpa points his spoon at Niall and murmurs to Papa, "Something's weird with your kid." Papa sighs, "Yeah, the other one seems fine though, so, you know, 50-50 is better odds than you played." Grandpa snorts at the self-deprecation, but furrows his bushy eyebrows. "You know, I heard once that a woman was in a car accident, hit her head, and when she woke up," his fingers dance in the air for effect, "she spoke perfect Mandarin." Papa shoots him a dubious look. "We didn't drop her," he says. "Didn't say that you did," Grandpa says, holding up his hands. "Just thought you should, you know, keep an eye on it." Papa rolls his eyes. "Yeah, all right. We'll keep an eye on it." They're visiting a friend's house, and Niall makes sure to send all her imaginary people away because real people are important to play with, too. Mama and her friend are talking in the kitchen while Niall and the other girl play around the house. Their house is so cool and big. It has rooms to explore, and they're playing hide-and-seek tag. Outside is out of bounds. But Niall hears her friend running down the stairs, and she's about to get caught, so she sneaks out the back door. It's cold outside, and she doesn't have her coat, but she's only got to run around to the side door. Then she hears something sweet and happy. It almost sounds like her name. She turns around, and sees the big pool with the fence all the way around it. The sound is coming from in there. The fence is tall, but Niall is strong. She grips the rails and starts to climb. She's just at the top and about to jump over the top when Mama's arms grab her around the middle. "What are you doing?" Mama demands. "It's freezing out here." "I wanted to hear the song," Niall says. Mama looks her over with concern, then back at the pool. "Never do that again, okay?" she says, and her voice is shaking a little. Niall nods. "Ugh, again?" Mama groans and bangs at the keyboard. "These things just don't like me." She reaches up and hits the side of the computer screen a few times and calls over her shoulder. "We're lucky the Marines are supplying these now. We might have to ask for a replacement again." Papa is wiping down the kitchen after Travis and Niall's semi-successful attempt at baking. "I don't think it's you. It's military contracts doing what they do best again." But Niall knows it isn't Mama's fault or the computer. Mama goes outside to watch Travis run around the garden, and Niall stands in the hallway. "I don't think you should try again," she says. The silvery image of Book stares back at her. He's so tall. "The computer doesn't work," she says. "Don't use it." He floats towards her and through her, and Niall gets the familiar awful cold feeling running up her spine. "Mama's going to need it soon. You can't break it again," she insists. "There's this thing called email." But Book reaches out and pushes, and the computer turns on again. None of her people can pick things up. Only push and blow and touch. But Book holds a hand out over the keyboard, and the letters start pressing down, so many of them, so quickly, one after the other. The computer makes an awful screeching noise as it connects to the internet. "Stop it," she commands, trying to grab his wrist, but it slides right through him. Boxes pop up on the screen and fill with writing and numbers. "Joe," she calls out, "make him stop." But in that moment, Mama opens the door and sees Niall at the computer and the dinging sounds it's making, and Book vanishes. "Niall, what are you doing?" Mama demands. "I wasn't doing anything," Niall insists. "It's not a toy, all right?" "I didn't do it," Niall says. "It was..." "What is all of this? You've opened up some programming system," Mama says, quickly closing all the boxes. "You can't do that, Niall. If it breaks again and the military doesn't give us a new one, that means we can't send letters to Dad when he goes away. Do you want that?" "No," she screams. "Then don't touch the computer." Niall storms away to her room, her tiny body full of rage. She buries her face in her pillow and screams. When she looks up, there's a shimmering light of Book in the corner. "I don't want to talk to you," she says. Book looks even more sad than normal. He twists his mouth like he agrees with her decision and kneels down next to her bed. "You should have listened to me," she says. "It wasn't nice." Book nods, and he looks very sorry. On her bedside table is a glittery dinosaur and a picture of her papa in his fancy uniform. Book looks at the photograph, and Niall follows his eyes. "Papa is a soldier." Book's shoulders straighten, mimicking the pose in the photo. "Were you a soldier too?" Niall asks. Book nods. "He's going away soon," Niall says quietly into her pillow. Her eyes are stinging again. "He's going away to fight." Book stands back up sharply. His face looks furious. Even though it's daytime, the lights turn on and off very quickly. Book is so tall, but he looks like he's growing. The whole room gets cold and the cupboard begins to shake and wobble. A light bulb explodes and the door bangs open and shut. The whole room is alive with noise and wind, and Niall screams. Joe is there. Joe flies at Book and tackles him through the wall, and they disappear. Niall hears bang, banging all through the house, glass smashing, things falling off walls, and Travis starts crying. Niall runs downstairs, following the sounds, but she can't see them. Nikki appears too, but he flies towards the front door, and when he hits it, it bangs open. Niall feels a cold rush through her, and she knows Joe and Book have gone outside. There's a whirlwind of leaves, and the front door bangs closed after them. Niall! Niall, are you okay? Mama has Travis on her hip, and he's screaming. She touches all over Niall's face and body, making sure she's all right. I'm okay, Mama, Niall says. Mama clutches her close. What the hell was that? Mama and Papa are speaking in hushed voices. I feel so silly. You know, I even went to the library and researched all the deaths on this street, she says. Who says they're from this street? What do you mean? Well, she talks about all these places, other languages, Papa says. Mama laughs. You're talking about international ghosts, ghost immigration. I didn't say ghosts. I don't know what to call it, Papa says quickly. But it's unusual, always has been. There's a beat of silence, then Papa speaks again. Do you want to move? Back on base? No, no, Mama says. The kids deserve a real neighborhood. I just don't know what to do. Papa looks down at his hands and thinks. We could visit Pastor George, he suggests. Pastor George is a middle-aged man with short, tight hair and a black mustache, and Niall isn't sure if George is his first name or his last, but his office has some fascinating marble tracks and a big fish tank. Niall has never been in there before, only seen him on Sunday mornings and thought he had a nice voice. I hear you've got some special friends, Niall, he says, setting up a new part of the marble track. Niall nods. Are they in the room now? Niall narrows her eyes, always suspicious. No, she says. She doesn't give him much more. The marble runs down the length of the track and spins around the final piece. Do they talk to you? He asks. Not really. But you know their names, Mama says from behind. Niall frowns. It's hard for them. Talking. They tell me without telling me. I know you're very good with a pencil, Niall. Could you draw them for me? Niall shakes her head. I'm not allowed to draw what they look like. Why not? Miss Sandy would get mad. Pastor George gives her another marble. Why don't you want Miss Sandy to get mad? Because I like her. She's nice. The marble rolls all the way down, left, right, left, and spins around the funnel. What about the others? Do they get mad? Niall lifts her chin. Mama says everyone gets mad, and that's okay. Mama smiles and gives Niall a wink. What happens when your people get mad? Pastor George asks. Sometimes things feel strange and cold, but then they go away. Go away where? I don't know. Just go away. They talk about the marble track for a while more, and some of Pastor George's heavy books from his shelf are pulled down to make the tower even taller. Do they want you to do things? He asks. Draw. Exercise. Eat my vegetables, Niall says. All good ideas, he says with a smile. But your mother tells you the same things, I'm sure. They keep playing for a while. Then Niall has sat down with Travis in front of a television set playing a VHS of VeggieTales while Mama and Pastor George talk. So, Mama starts, nervous even as Pastor George calmly unwraps a hard candy. What do you think? I think you've got yourself a very bright, kind, and strong little girl, he says easily, popping the sweet into his mouth. And the... she trails off. The ghosts? Pastor George pulls a face. You don't think... Mama tries again. You don't think they're ghosts? Pastor George waves a hand dismissively. No, no, I don't believe in ghosts. You don't? Mama's voice is incredulous. Pastor George shrugs. Scripture is quite clear. Man is destined to die once, and after that, face judgment. Anything beyond that is outside of my jurisdiction, as it were. So you're what? You're saying there's no such thing as spirits? He fixes her with an incredulous look. Would I be sitting here in this office with this job if I didn't believe in the supernatural? Chastised, she sits back. So what are they? These people she sees. God doesn't tell us about every little step of the way. There's nothing in scripture about the internet, yet here we are, in the age of the dot-com. He laughs. Doesn't mean it took God by surprise. Well, can't you do something? Mama asks. Oh, you were expecting an old priest and a young priest, were you? Which one would I be? The idea seems to amuse him greatly, and his eyes twinkle. No, I'm not that kind of pastor, I'm afraid. But if you'd like one of the more chants, smells, and bells variety, I can supply you with the names of a few of my colleagues. Mama sits back and frowns in thought. So what do you suggest? She asks. Pastor George shrugs. Keep raising your children. Comfort them when they're scared. Teach them when they're wrong. Then, no matter what these people are that she sees, Niall will be well equipped to deal with them as they come. It's been 3 weeks since Booker got very upset, and Joe and Nikki fought him, and Niall hasn't seen any of her imaginary people. She's reading a picture book in her bedroom, because she has the biggest bookshelf and she likes to look at all of them while she reads, when she feels the quiet rush of wind and the cool chill that comes with one of them pushing back to see her. Joe, she says with a smile. Joe's glow has dimmed a little, and he looks tired, but he smiles back at her. What happened to Book Book? She asks. Behind Joe, a book flies off the shelves and falls open. It's a baby book, one that just names animals and feelings. It fell open to the page. Mr. Lion is angry. He was mad at me, Niall says softly. Joe shakes his head. No, no. Then why was he so mad? Joe's face twists in thought, and Niall gets a wave of concern, responsibility, regret. You're gonna say it's a grown-up thing, Niall guesses, and Joe laughs noiselessly. Where did everybody go? She asks. Another book flies off the shelf, and the wind blows through the pages until it lands on a picture of a family of bears hugging, but he also places his hands out like he's gripping something. You were holding him, Niall says, remembering an upset boy at church, helping him calm down. Joe nods, then points at Niall, with his eyebrows raised. Papa left, Niall says, putting on a brave face. I'm okay. Joe looks back down at the picture of the bears hugging. He reaches out a hand and tries to put it on her shoulder, but it passes right through her. A blanket lifts up off the bed and flops on top of Niall. Hey, Niall says, trying to punch her way out of it, but Joe doesn't let her. The blanket presses around her like a lovely hug. Then it spreads out underneath her like a trampoline and bounces her up and down, throwing her into the air. Niall squeals with delight, and she can't see him, but she hears the distant sound she now thinks of as Joe's feeling of happiness. It's like wind chimes. She's placed gently down on the ground, and the book she was reading before lands next to her as well. It's the Sleeping Beauty story. She can't read the words, but she knows it well enough, mostly. Once upon a time, she says, turning to the first page, there was a king and a queen in a faraway castle. Two dolls from her dollhouse drift through the air towards her. When her people are invisible, they can be stronger, can make things move easier. The dolls waggle as she talks. They were married for a really, really, really long time, but they didn't have any kids, and that made them sad. They wanted to have a baby very much. The dolls tilt forward in the air like they're sad. And then they had a baby, and it was a girl, and they had a really big party, Niall says. Toys zoom around the room and surround her. Even the army men she dropped behind the wardrobe fly out from their hiding space. They all come dancing side to side. All the fairies came and gave her good gifts like, singing and dancing, she says. One by one, her teddies come and do a little spin in front of the two dolls and the button in the baby crib that she's been using as a baby since she lost the tiny toy. But the evil fairy wasn't invited to the party, so she got so mad. The Barbie with the chopped-off hair always stands in as the baddies in her play. Joe knows that. Her legs move, jerking back and forth as she walks over to the crib. And the evil fairy put a spell on the baby. And then I can't remember the next bit, but then Sleeping Beauty gets locked in a tower. A princess dressed, that Niall had stripped off her other Barbie puffs up in the air and floats gently upwards like a balloon and is placed up high on the top of her bookshelf. "She was locked away and she fell asleep," Niall says, looking up. This part of the story always made her so sad. "She fell asleep for hundreds and hundreds of years, and no one came to rescue her." Mama always says Niall is dramatic when she tells the story, so she pauses and places her hands over her heart to really feel the sorrow. There's the tinkling sound from Joe again, because he likes to watch her act. But then she hears another sound, like a man's yell far away in the distance. Joe reappears, standing on tiptoe next to the bookshelf where he put the princess dress. "Was that book?" she asks. From the look on Joe's face and the feelings that are pushed to her, she gets the idea that the hugging and calming of book isn't done yet. Joe looks off to the side, looking at nothing but concerned. "Go," Niall says. "He's your family, too." Joe smiles at her, sad and grateful, and he disappears. That night, Niall hears something new in her sleep, a woman's voice calling out and beautiful, and Niall is sure she's hearing Princess Aurora with her gift of singing. Niall is 4 years old, and Papa is home, so they're going to Lake Michigan Beach. It's a beautiful, warm day, and Niall is wearing her swimmers and a ring floaty around her middle as she walks around on the sand. She puts her feet in the water, then jumps back out, taking shells back to Travis on the towel, where Mama and Papa are trying to stop him from eating sand. Niall wants to play mermaid, but Mama and Papa are tired from their first big swim and want a break. She's bending down and digging in the sand, struggling around her floaty and her belly to reach, when she hears the singing again. It's such a beautiful song. Niall looks around, tries to find where it's coming from. She sees something move in the water. Niall takes a few steps into the gentle waves. The water comes up to her knees, then her legs. "Don't go out too far," Mama calls, getting up off the towel. Niall nods back at her, then plants her feet in the wet sand. The song is so beautiful. She doesn't understand the words, but she likes it. She sees something come towards her through the water, swimming as natural as a fish. It's a woman. She has straight, dark hair that floats behind her. She's wearing something white, something like a long dress, but it's rough and torn and stained. Niall can't see what's under the dress, whether it's feet or a fin, but the lady doesn't come up to breathe, so she must be a mermaid. The mermaid swims around Niall's legs in a circle, tickling her toes and continuing her singing, but her voice is right in Niall's head. Niall giggles and puts a hand in the water to touch her. The mermaid catches Niall's ankle in her claw-like hand, and she pulls. Niall topples over, her floaty ring keeping her above the water, but her legs kick below and she can't touch the bottom anymore. "Niall?" Mama calls out. "Mama!" she screams. Then the mermaid pulls again. She's holding Niall by the ankle. She turns and swims away fast, dragging Niall out into the deep. So fast that Niall starts making waves in the water like a boat, and water splashes up into her mouth and makes her cough. Niall can see Papa jumping up and diving into the water after her, but already he's so small and distant. "Stop it!" Niall demands. The mermaid stops and lets go of her ankle. She swims around Niall, looking up at her from under the water. She's got pretty eyes, but Niall is scared and so far away from the beach. The mermaid smiles like she's trying to be nice, trying to smile like Mama. "Come on," she says from under the water. No bubbles escape her mouth when she talks, and she's talking right into Niall's head. "It's nice down here. You can stay a child forever. Wouldn't that be fun?" The sweetness doesn't trick Niall at all. "You're scary," she says. The mermaid bares her teeth. She slashes at Niall's floaty with her clawed hand, and it rips. Niall kicks her feet, but she can't swim, and Niall begins to sink. She takes a deep breath as her head slips under the water. She's not sinking fast enough for the mermaid, apparently. The mermaid grabs Niall again and drags her deep down into the dark, cold water. Niall tries to hold her breath, but she's scared, so scared. She forces her eyes open to see, and just when she does, she sees Miss Andy fly through the water. She attacks the mermaid, breaking her grip on Niall. Miss Andy's face is strange, something fierce and scary. The mermaid fights back. "She's been chosen!" she screams at Miss Andy as the two of them tumble through the water, clawing at each other. "She's ours! We can have her now! A child, Andromache, a baby! We can have her!" Niall kicks her feet, trying to get back to the water, but she can't figure out which way is up, and she can't swim. Book-Book dives down from the surface, holding an air bubble in his hands. He brings it to her, touches it to her mouth and nose, and she takes a deep breath. Joe and Nikki appear on either side of her, holding her arms and pulling her upwards. The mermaid screams again, endlessly fighting with Miss Andy, and she sounds ugly and terrifying. It's a long way to the surface, and Niall runs out of breath. She chokes on the water, but soon she's coughing up water and breathing. Nikki and Joe are there, holding her up. They don't look wet at all, but they do look terrified and furious. Nikki says something silently to Book-Book, who disappears under the water, diving back to the churning water that is Miss Andy and the scary mermaid locked in battle. Joe and Nikki keep her floating and pull her back towards the shore and Papa, who is desperately swimming towards her. They hold her up together until Papa grabs her, and then they disappear into nothing. "Niall! Niall!" Papa cries. His heart is racing under her chest where she's pressed. With one arm, he kicks and swims them all the way back to shore. The other clings Niall to himself. Mama is screaming. Her face is wet with tears. She's gripping Travis's hand so tightly it hurts. All four of them collapse together on the sand. "You need to tell those imaginary friends of yours to leave you alone," Papa says through gritted teeth. Niall is too scared and shaken up to try and explain that they saved her. Niall is 11 years old and hasn't seen or thought about her imaginary people in years. Papa is deployed again, somewhere hot, he says, but he can't say more than that. Her days now are full of video games, friendship drama, and karate lessons. Her strange memories of those people she once knew explained away as rip currents and bad technology and an overactive imagination that is so childish. It's early morning. So early the sky is still gray and Niall should still be sleeping, but she wakes up and she doesn't know why. She almost buries her face back into the pillow, but she gets the strangest feeling that she's being watched and there's a chill in the room. Niall slowly pulls back the covers from over her head. There are four people in her room, all tall, towering over her bed, looking down at her. They look awful and sad, their faces long and drawn. They look familiar. But it can't be. She hasn't seen them, not since she was a kid, not since the water. The white guy with the beard is crying. What was his name again? Something silly. The woman puts her arm around him, and for the first time she speaks. "We're so sorry, Niall," she says. Her voice is strange and echoing. "We did everything we could." Then they're gone, and her room is empty. Niall pulls on her robe, a chill running down her back. "Mom, the strangest thing just happened," she said, running down the stairs. But she stops dead. The front door is open. There are two uniformed Marines standing on the stoop. Mom is on the floor, and Niall knows exactly what that means. Niall is 21 years old and trying to concentrate on her first unassisted parachute jump. She doesn't mind doing the jumps, and she studied hard, passing all the theory and assisted jumps. But still, throwing yourself out from a height and trusting you'll still be okay at the end of it always gets her heart thumping. "Private Karam," the sergeant yells over the noise of the wind howling outside the open door of the plane. Dizzy unbuckles her seat and jumps up, hanging onto the straps from the roof to keep herself steady as she walks towards the door. "Then Private Freeman, Private Towley." Niall and Jay get up behind her. She's standing in line, gripping the shoulders of her parachute pack, staring at Dizzy and she's more scared than she looks. Then she gets the peculiar feeling that there's an extra person on the plane. She feels a cool chill, as familiar as deja vu. Then she hears Jay behind her cry out, "Abort! Abort! Niall, your pack!" She turns around and almost trips on the mess of cables and material behind her that have suddenly appeared. They weren't there when she stood up, and she realizes that her parachute pack is light and empty on her back. Heart sinking into her gut, she falls into the seat and buckles up, holding on tight. Christ, she had been just about to jump. The sergeant presses the button that closes the plane doors, and the plane is utterly silent with the loss of the roar of the wind. "What the hell?" Sergeant asks. Now, firmly buckled in, Niall pulls the pack off her shoulders and looks it over. The bag is split along the bottom, right in the middle of the fabric, not along the seam, like a knife had cut it open. "Did you do something?" Sergeant demands of Jay. "No, it did it by itself. I watched it," Jay says quickly, even though it doesn't make any sense. "It just opened up." Niall is very, very glad she wasn't called up to do her jump first. "Look!" Dizzy is kneeling over the pile of what would have been Niall's parachute. "Look at the clasps," she says. "Whoever packed this suit is in so much trouble." The clasps that should have held the parachute to the wires were never attached properly. They click apart at the slightest tug. If that had been all that was holding Niall to the parachute, she would be a smear on the ground by now. Jay laughs, a little delirious, and smacks Niall on the shoulder. "You got a guardian angel or something out there?" "Yeah," Niall says, "or something." Niall is 26 years old, stationed in Afghanistan for her first combat duty, and her troop calls her the luckiest son of a bitch in the Marines. It's only half a joke. It isn't that she's superstitious. She just gets bad feelings about certain things, and she learned long ago to trust her gut first. Everyone wants to drive in her jeep during convoy, and when Niall suggests a route, the driver will always take it. She hasn't seen combat, not yet, but when she's gone into battle zones following the forward guard, she knows what's happened just from surveying the damage. She even warned the sergeant not to go down a certain road, and when they sent the bomb squad, they found an unexploded shell under a car. Dizzy loves to talk her up every time one of Niall's bad vibes turns out to be true. "I'm telling you, man," she says, shaking Niall's shoulder proudly over lunch in the cafeteria. "This girl's a genius. Walk her around Gettysburg and she'll tell you exactly where Robert E. Lee shit himself." Niall snaps her mouth shut because if she opens it, she feels like she'd say something about the stench of blood and shit made worse in the heat. The disease will kill more soldiers than an army ever can. That hills are a nightmare in battle no matter which side you're fighting on. That fields have their own challenges compared to fighting in city streets like they're doing. She keeps those thoughts to herself. Niall's gun never jams. She's hardly ever thrown down during hand-to-hand, and she has an uncanny knack to be able to pick someone's ethnicity right down to the region of their ancestors' country just by looking at them. Niall has a lot of party tricks like that. She's never questioned how she knows it all. Niall and her platoon are deployed out of Camp Leatherneck and into a town in rural Afghanistan built with clay. Jeeps trundling through keep kicking up dust into her mouth as they show the locals a photograph of the militant they think has holed up somewhere in the area. Niall is always talking with the interpreter, the locals, and also the children. She's got half a dozen languages under her belt now. She picks them up easily. She makes friends easily, too. Despite her uniform and rank and the distinct weirdness about her, people find her intriguing. And she listens so intently to all of their stories that she usually gets information no one else in the platoon does. While she's doing all this, Niall's eyes keep sweeping up and down the road, looking at the faces and behavior of both her platoon and the locals. She's watching for any sign of burgeoning violence, disrespect, or concealed anger. Someone is looking at her, staring straight at her with an expression she can't quite decipher. A man, handsome, local, wearing a taqiya on his curls. Only he's not a local. His face reminds her more of Northern Africa. No, that's not quite right. He looks like... Freeman, where are you at? Sergeant calls out. Niall turns to him instantly. Here, Sergeant. She looks back over at the crowd, but the man has vanished. The women are holed up at the house with the arches. Take a right at the building with the red carpet. Get me, he cuts off. Corporal Freeman? Niall? Niall turns back to him. Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. He eyeballs her. You all right? She stands up straight, tearing her eyes away from the place the man was standing. Yes, sir. Any weird vibes? He asks with a grin, but his eyes are serious. No, sir. Right, he says. Take your team. Get me some information. Roger that. Niall nods and calls out to the others and the interpreter to follow her. When she looks back at the street again, there's no sign of the man with the familiar face. Niall Freeman, 26, dies in the building with the arches. Dizzy is holding her neck together when she dies, and as Niall fades into the black, she gets the strangest feeling that dying is all too familiar. Niall wakes back up on base, the camp hospital. She's dressed in a paper gown and has a patch on her throat. She sits up sharply and looks around. The hospital is mostly empty. She's not attached to any machines, no heart monitor or breathing tube. Her spare uniform is folded on the chair beside her bed. She grabs it. Excuse me, she mumbles to the doctor on duty, making a direct line to the bathroom. The doctor didn't even look up at her. In the small contained cubicle, she carefully removes the tape, peering at herself in the mirror. Nothing. Not so much as a scratch. Her neck, which was cut through and spilling blood not too long ago, it's fine. It's healed. What the hell? She whispers. She should be dead, shouldn't she? She died. Niall gets changed quickly into her uniform, sliding on pants, a shirt, and jacket. She even clips her gold necklace around her neck, absentmindedly flipping the cross over left and right as she stares into the mirror. This is a whole new level of shit, she says to herself. She slides out of the bathroom cubicle and goes back to the hospital bed, where she sits and tugs on her boots. As she's tying the laces, she glances up at the tent entrance. There's a woman standing at the door to the hospital. She's in civilian dress, but she holds herself like a general. The woman takes a step backwards and, without a word, jerks her head for Niall to follow. The doctor doesn't stop her. None of the passing soldiers pay Niall or the woman any mind as they stride quickly through the base. No one stops the two of them. No one so much as looks at them. The woman walks with purpose and direction, weaving in and out of tents and vehicles. Even Niall can get lost in the maze of the camp, but the woman easily takes her to a quiet corner and behind a few shipping containers. There are three men standing there, in civilian dress, waiting for her. You made it, one says, with a small smile, the one she thought she saw on the street before she... Who are you people? Niall demands. You know who we are, the woman says, slow and measured. And she's right. The woman is Andromache. Niall knows this just from looking at her, but they call her Andy. Joe, Niall says, looking at the one that greeted her, then at the man beside him. Nikki. Then she stops at the last one. Call me Booker, please, he jumps to say, a flush rising in his cheeks. I go by Booker. Some of the time, Nikki says, teasing, and from his smile, Niall knows he remembers the childish nickname. Oh, Niall says, surprised to hear Nikki's voice. I didn't know you had an accent. That makes them all chuckle, and everyone except for Niall relaxes. How are you all here? She demands. What are you? We're like you now, Andy says. Immortal. We've been waiting for you to join us for a long time. Immortal? Niall repeats. Yeah, see, Andy says, casual as anything. Then she pulls out a knife and stabs it into Booker's shoulder. Ow, Booker says. For some reason, that display doesn't shock her, doesn't turn her stomach. With a grimace, he grips the handle and pulls it free. We all died through history, he explains, wiping the knife on his pants. But here we are. Are you ghosts? Why do I know you all? How were you there when I was a kid? We don't die, and we don't age either, Booker adds. We had visions of you when you were born, Joe says. Andy nods. It's always the same with a new one. It's like the world is thin between us. So with a little effort, we can be there with you. So we can teach you, let you grow up safe and happy, Nikki says. Then why did you disappear? Niall asks. You asked us to leave. But kids are always more accepting of the bizarre than adults. You were growing up, Booker says. Joe nods. But we never stopped protecting you until it was time. Niall shakes her head in thought. The story they're telling is strange and unbelievable, but when they say it, it feels right. All those feelings I got, all that knowledge, she looks up at Andy. That was you? Andy straightens her spine. There is some bleed through, the other direction as well, but you were young, not in control of it. The older you are, the more control you have when you appear, Joe says. Booker is the youngest. That's why he lost control of his emotions, and why Andy is the only one who can speak. No, there was another one, Niall remembers. The one in the water. The mood changes as all their faces darken. Her name was Quinn, Nikki says. She is lost to us and driven mad. She is ancient and strong. We spent a lot of your childhood fighting her off, Joe says. These ancient, immortal, and ghostly protectors. For a moment, Niall looks at them, standing there in civilian clothes, people you wouldn't notice on the street. Then suddenly she looks through them, and they are almost unrecognizable. Andromache isn't wearing a tank top anymore. She's wearing furs and a necklace made of bones. Her skin is painted and her hair is tied back in two long plaits. Joe and Nikki are wearing chainmail and tunics. Joe has a turban, and Nikki's hair is long and mangy. Booker is suddenly heavily bearded, dressed in a blue jacket with buttons all down the front and gold fringe on the shoulders. Every single one of them is dead. They're dead and standing there, staring at her, covered in blood and gore, broken limbs sticking out at angles. Nikki is missing a chunk out of his head. Oh, God, she can see his brains. Blood is everywhere, all over them, except for Booker. His neck is stretched, long and broken, and he's staring at her with tilted, dead, cold eyes. Then Niall remembers her own death, touches her neck, and her fingers sink into the wet flap of her throat, and her fingertips brush her esophagus. She looks down, and she's still in her combat uniform, Kevlar vest black with blood. Then she looks up, and the vision and the awful feeling is gone. She's forgotten what she saw. They look like people again, whole and complete, just how they see themselves. The hand at her neck touches smooth, healed skin. Why did you let me die? Niall asks. You were there. You could have stopped me going into that house. Joe looks away. It was time for you to join us, Andy says. We can't stop that part, not even if we try. I'm sorry. We've been looking forward to meeting you properly for so long now, Nikki says. He grasps Joe's hand. Come with us, Niall, Joe says. This is only the beginning. Niall glances behind herself, at the bustle of the military base, the shouting commanders, then back at these people, the faces she's known since birth. Yeah, all right, she says. I'm in. Andy wraps an arm around her shoulders, and together they all walk into the light of the desert sun. The end.